We apologize for this brief interruption in the show. As many of you likely know, the Higher Standard Podcast is officially sponsored by Transcend Company. Transcend has been my longtime provider for both testosterone and peptide therapies. But they offer so much more. Whether you're interested in health, wellness, or longevity, it all begins with you getting your blood work done. A lab draw will help you get the numbers and establish your baseline. You can go to transcendcompany.com/THSP. That's transcendcompany.com/THSP. Or you can click the link in the show notes on any streaming platform and on YouTube. Fill out your information and one of the representatives will contact you to get your journey started today. Now back to the show.
So are they going to bring you in for a deposition on that Diddy trial?
You're going to jump right into that? Really? It's out the gate?
Right now, baby.
I'm just going to go ahead and say what America has not said.
What? Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm going to say it. And I recognize this is probably going to be a trigger. Trigger alert for everybody out there.
Trigger alert.
Okay. If your house, God forbid, ever gets raided by anybody for sex trafficking.
Wait, multiple houses.
I know that you have a lot of houses. But in this example, if your house site ever gets raided, okay, much less your house in Los Angeles, in your house in Miami, the same time by the federal authorities for sex trafficking.
Yeah.
Okay. Not drug possession, not guns, trafficking of people for sex.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you are spotted on your private plane going from Los Angeles to Miami and then pacing outside of a private airport in a really weird fashion. And then you get on your private plane, which is fully fueled up, and go to Antigua. I'm just going to say it, America, that's a bad look.
It's an extremely bad look. He's clearly going over there for protection.
There's no. Okay, look, you could say, hey, I had a vacation planned and I decided to still go.
Yeah.
Your homes have been raided by federal authorities for sex trafficking.
I want you to know if this ever happens to you, Chris, I am not your lifeline. Delete my phone number. That's it.
Oh, did I ever tell my Warren Sapp story?
No, we got to get into that. We're going to get into it later in the show, though.
The reason why we don't speak anymore is because I told him I am not your lifeline.
Oh, yeah. Wow. How funny. Yeah.
I am not getting you out of jail this time.
Yeah. Oh, shit. Yeah. There you go. And now it's out there for the public. Welcome back to the show, everybody. This week, we got a special topic that we want to get into that we feel like will be extremely valuable for you, not only you, but your family as well. We want to get into trust, revocable trust, irrevocable trust, things of that nature. Having a trust can be important and valuable for several reasons, especially in terms of estate planning and even asset protection.
You practiced that, didn't you?
No, I mean, this guy's right.
No, you practiced that.
A little bit.
That was a little bit of the
mirror. Just a little bit, yeah. And we want to get into why it's important for you, why you absolutely need it. I mean, you're clearly tuning into a financial literacy podcast. You're hoping to grow your wealth over time. And as time goes on, you absolutely will need this to protect yourself and your family.
All right. So for context, I think it's important to really kind of dive down into why we feel like speaking on this topic is relevant to you. It is not naturally what I would call a financial vehicle to most. It's an asset protection vehicle, which does have its arm in the context of financial wealth building.
Right.
So as underwriters, me formerly, Syed currently by trade, we see a lot of wealthy people's financials. And one of the recurring themes that we started to see over time was there was a consistent trend of people having trust. As a matter of fact, you probably heard that one of the most common assets or vehicles for people to hold their assets in real estate world or in our LLCs because you have a passive income benefit and you can write down certain things that really benefit you. So LLCs are the most common vehicle to hold investment real estate across the country. Trusts are how people hold their interest in the LLC.
Exactly. So if an LLC owns, let's just say, we'll use a real estate property as the asset tool in this example, the LLC owns the property outright 100%. Your trust, your family trust, or your living trust will own 100% of that LLC. So they start to layer it.
So what we're going to do is we're going to kind of give you some of the benefits of these things. And we're going to explain to you some of the nuances that we've seen over time. But I must tell you, caveat here, I am a licensed and practicing attorney. This is not legal advice. You should seek counsel for your own legal needs. But I am going to give you some general theoretical legal advice, which may or may not pertain to you.
Right. This was definitely one of those things for me, like you mentioned earlier, that as an underwriter over the years, you know, we see the formula. part of the formula of how, you know, the rich become wealthy and right. they, you know, maintain their wealth and establish their wealth. And this is one of those recurring themes that I would constantly see, that every single person would have a trust, a family trust, a living trust, that they would typically hold some, if not all, of their assets in.
So let's walk through the lifeline of some terminology and explain to you some of the differences of things you're probably going to hear. Mm-hmm. Typically speaking, most people during their lifetime create a trust that is built for their lifetime, or inter vivos, during their lifetime, right? There's some Latin language here. It's from law school. It's an old habit for me to get rid of. Just know it's a trust that you create as a vehicle in your lifetime. That is generally revocable, meaning that if you say, hey, I have the Saeed family trust, but I want to make changes to it, you can change anything you want during your lifetime. Mm-hmm. Upon your death, if you were the only person who made the trust, it then becomes irrevocable, meaning that you cannot change what has been put in place by you.
Yeah, it shifts over, right?
It shifts over.
From being revocable to irrevocable. Now, if you get, let's say you get a trust, because there's all kinds of places now where you can get trust, right? If you go to a good attorney that specializes in this, right? They're going to ask you a series of questions, some of them that you've never thought of or never thought you needed to think about, mm-hmm. right? That you start to plan. And then a really good one will allow you to come back and check in every few years or every so often to now update this revocable trust.
Yeah, and it is kind of a money grab in some cases by attorneys. Let's be honest about that. In other cases, it's technology has been deplacing this need for a long time. Mm-hmm. I really like Sal from Mind Pump's Cousins program, getdynasty.com, where he does this for you and has a follow-up built up into it. It's actually kind of fantastic for getting started. The cost is relatively innocuous compared to some of the legal costs I've seen from traditional attorneys, but The main thing you need to do if you go through this process, whether you're using something like Get Dynasty or, you know, you're going to an attorney or you're doing it yourself on LegalZoom, which I do not advise, you need to be able to ask yourself the hard questions. And a great example is, Saeed, what's going to happen to your kids if you die?
Yeah, you can imagine how, you know, this answer will change over the years as they continue to get older.
It does.
Right? Yeah. So right now, if something were to happen to me, I would need to make sure, I need to figure out who's going to take guardianship over them, right? Mm-hmm. And as time goes on, let's just say I need to update it. Now they're 18 years old, but I know they're actually not financially literate yet. I need to protect the assets from them to make sure that they don't run the whole empire down to the ground, right? So, and as time goes on, you can continue to modify these things.
So I will point out there are special and unique trusts that are out there. You're going to hear about them, Delaware Statutory Trust, all sorts of unique variations like that. I'm not going to get into the nuances of each one, but suffice it to say that those are wrong for about 99.9% of people.
Absolutely.
If you have a tax need or somebody from an estate planning purpose that really tells you that you need a certain trust and tells you the benefits, that's a different story. But for most of America, just creating a simple living trust that you can change during your lifetime will help you do things like avoid probate.
Yes, and so, this is massive.
Yeah. Right? Probate has tax consequences.
A lot of tax consequences, and it really holds the assets that, let's just say, if I were to pass away at some point in time in the future, and I have assets that I want to pass down to my kids, and I don't have a trust, and now these assets need to go through probate. It takes, on average, 18 months for those assets to transfer over to my kids because it goes into this whole probate process.
The probate process is basically a court getting involved. Yeah. A judge going, okay, Saeed passed. He has X, Y, and Z assets. He did not leave a will or a living trust. And in doing so, we're going to decide where his money goes and to whom.
They need it. So what happens is, let's say I have several investment properties, right? By that time, hopefully, right? That's the goal. They contact all the creditors and they let them know that I passed away. And they need to make sure that all the debts are paid.
Well, they're going to name a trustee who does that on their behalf.
Right, on their behalf.
To settle the estate.
Yeah, but you can imagine it's being handled by the court, and how many people are passing away, how many assets are going through probate. That's why this process takes a long time. So they want to make sure all your taxes are paid. They want to make sure that all debts are paid off, right? Mm-hmm. So that's why they say typically on average 18 months for it to eventually get to my heirs, as they call it.
So let's define some terms here. If I create a trust, I am the trustor, right?
Yes.
I created the trust. My wife and I create a trust. We are both trustors. If we are in control of the trust, like during our lifetime, We are also both the trustees.
Yes.
We have a fiduciary responsibility to the trust to preserve its assets as trustees. In 99% of the cases for people who are doing this for their trust, for their living trust, myself and my wife are going to create trust as trustors, and we're also going to be the trustees. However, you can name trustees that move into place upon your death, and most trusts do this, right? So in the event that I die, I would like Saeed to be my trustee. So my wife and I would name Saeed as trustee in the event of our death. And then instead of the court naming somebody to handle the estate, Saeed would then step in and handle the estate.
And I would handle the estate and I would follow the trust to the T. So I would make sure that everything gets handled exactly the way Chris and Joanna had written out exactly how they wanted it to get handled, right?
So I think the ownership of trust, generally speaking, has the logical fallacy of privacy. Unfortunately, for most people, they do the same reoccurring thing. And a lot of attorneys encourage this, and I never truly understood why.
Interesting.
They'll say, hey, Saeed, name your trust the Saeed Omar Living Trust.
Just a
or the Omar Family Living Trust.
You know, when I get a trust, it's going to be something fly. It can't just be the Saeed Omar or the Omar Family Trust.
Kobe Day Forever Trust.
Come on, all day, every day.
Yeah, I mean. Yeah. But that
THS?
Goes, yeah, well, so my family trust is actually the CMN Family Trust.
Okay.
Right? My initials. And I had this before I got married. So one of the things to think about is, this is a great example of it. I had the CMN, my initials, Family Trust. And I chose that name specifically because it didn't have my last name in it.
Yes.
Which I'm doing no service to right now to protect the privacy.
Right.
And the reason why I chose that name is it was ambiguous enough, but still close enough to where I felt like that was a good name. But you can name it anything you want. Most people just choose their family name because it's a family trust. That being said, I've got married. I've got two choices at that point in time. I could amend my trust, right? So I could have the CMN Family Trust dated, the date that I created it, amended on whatever date I amended it.
Right.
So you often see this language in reference to trust. So if I didn't amend it, CMN Family Trust created on January 1 of 2023. But let's say I got married in February. CMN Family Trust amended in February.
Right.
Right? Or I can do something known as a complete restatement.
Yes.
Right? So let's just say, you know what? The trust was good for what I needed it for, but now I'm married. Now there's more complexities. We've got a son. Rather than try to amend this, we're just going to completely restate the entire trust.
Right.
So that'll be the CMN Family Trust restated and then the date.
And one thing to really keep in mind here is by doing something like this, you're being proactive, right? Yes, Chris mentioned that it is a money grab by, you know, attorneys out there. But really, you're
saving... A really good attorney, it's not a money grab. Just keep in mind, if nothing changed, tangibly in the year, then you don't have to go in and talk to your attorney.
Right. Exactly. But definitely, you're saving a lot. You're saving, you know, the people that the assets are being transferred over to, you're saving them a lot of money, you know, on the back end because of, you know, estate planning and you don't have to pay the capital gains taxes, right?
Yeah. Well, as you get older, one of the things you'll find that really helps avoid tax liability is actually passing these assets on to your children during your lifetime vis-a-vis the trust.
Yeah.
And there's a couple benefits here that people don't think about from just a human perspective. Number one, you get to see your kids enjoy the monetary benefit during your lifetime. Okay. Number two, there's a tax benefit to them getting it during their lifetime, and you can help them with the taxes. So upon your death, they're not just getting hit with this whirlwind of emotions. Obviously, you're gone. Right. And oh, by the way, I've got to deal with these financial consequences as a result of it. And I'm changing my life by adding X, Y, and Z elements to it as per your trust.
Right.
So it's a lot more humane. I hate to describe it that way. If you start passing assets along before you actually die. But there's a lot more that goes into trust people don't think about. I mean, keep in mind, there's an asset protection here. Your trust is a separate entity than you.
It has its own social security number, a tax ID number.
Well, most people will actually attach it to their own tax ID number.
Right, but it could.
You
right?
can get a separate tax ID number from the government and treat it as a separate vehicle. Most people don't want to do that because they don't want to file a separate tax return for their trust. So they file it as a statement attached to their current tax return as a family trust.
Exactly.
And, you know, for tax purposes, that's fine. You also insulate yourself because a trust is treated separately. So you still get the same benefit, even though it shows up on your tax return as just an extension of you. very similar to an S corp, for example, right? Mm-hmm. Now, what I think is really, really important here that I think people miss is that life happens fast, right? You set this up and you say, okay, I don't own anything besides my primary residence. Do I need this? Yes, you do.
Yes.
Okay. Chris, I don't own a primary residence. I just have a couple of bank accounts and I'm learning. I've got a kid. Do I need this? Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Chris, it's just me. I don't have any kids. I don't have any assets yet. I'm learning and growing. Do I need this? No, you don't absolutely need it. Is it a good practice to have it? Yes. Mm-hmm. In the event that you die, do you really want the legislative system determining where what happens? Do you really want your mom, your dad, your nephews, whoever's going to benefit from you, from your passing, whoever's going to be related to you to get that or has a claim to it?
Right.
Do you really want them to have to go through a separate process? Or do you want to make it as streamlined as possible? People say, well, Chris, I'm young. I'm not going to die. My wife and I, to this day, still question whether we should fly on the same flight with that whenever our son's at home and we're going somewhere on our own. Because when you think about it, if that plane goes down, we're both gone.
I mean, no different than, you know, the president and the vice president never can be on the same flight, or executives at corporations, yeah. Right? Yeah.
It's just redundancy. I would say a trust functions in much of the same way. It gives you the redundancy, the coverage that in worst case event scenario, something happens. But people forget that life happens quickly. You could not own a piece of real estate, buy a piece of real estate, and not think about the trust.
It's easy to think, right, that everything's fine, but we all know it could all be taken away tomorrow. And in my opinion, what better thing to give, let's just say your loved ones, let's say you do have assets and you want to pass it on, what better thing to give them than, like, they now all of a sudden have all these assets that, you know, you've now given them, but have no idea how to control it. You can establish a property management company for them so they know who to go to. You can control the distribution of the assets. So, like, I think Shaq said something once that his kids aren't going to get anything unless they get 2 degrees. Like, you can go that far.
Shaq is a very underrated, like, intelligent entrepreneur.
Well, you know what makes him, I think, so intelligent is he knows when he needs to just listen and trust others and delegate the process.
I wish Arun was like that.
He is like that. What do you mean?
Arun, welcome back to the show, brother.
Thank you, sir.
It's been a long time. We missed you, and I'm taking shots because I'm emotionally still reeling from your absence.
We have missed you a lot.
I apologize. Family stuff taken care of.
Yeah. I thought we were family. Did I miss that part of the relationship?
No, we are family.
I feel like I didn't read the room right on that.
Arun's been taking care of some stuff, and maybe on a future episode we'll get into it. We'll leave it up to him.
Basically saying he doesn't want to hear about your shit right now.
No, it's not true. I didn't want to put him on the spot and be like, nah, I really don't want to share.
You just assume that he's not sharing?
No, I don't know. What do you mean? I'm not assuming. I just don't want to force him.
All right, well, before we leave the trust episode, trust segment of this episode, I do want to cover a couple nuances that over the years I think are important for people to understand. If you're going to get a loan on your home, a lot of agency lenders, your Fannie, Freddie's, if you're going to get a loan on your home, they'll tell you, hey, Chris, the property that you're buying has to go into your name, and then contemporaneous with closing, at the same time of closing your property, we'll also put it into your trust name, which then eliminates the privacy because someone can search title records and find your name, and then it's going into a trust, and they go, oh, well, Chris owns this trust because it went from him directly into this trust.
Yes.
Now they just search the trust name, and they find all your properties. To avoid that, you can work with smaller lenders that'll go directly into the trust name, right? Or, frankly, you can try not to put certain properties into your trust when you want to keep them separate.
Yeah, I've heard that some lenders, if the property's held under a trust, they won't even give you, like, a HELOC.
Correct, yeah. It's bizarre. Well, HELOCs right now, they're just trying to find ways not to do them because they're really concerned about the housing market and valuations.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it originally started with, like, you know, we're not going to go behind somebody else's first trust deed. So if Wells Fargo made the first trust deed, you had to go to Wells Fargo to get a second trust deed. Mm-hmm. What if Wells Fargo stopped making them?
Right.
You know, second trust deeds, which they did for a while. Mm-hmm. And I think they still haven't. But, you know, you got to play that game a little bit. There's some idiosyncrasies that are there. Once your trust goes from revocable, meaning that you can change at any point in time, to irrevocable, it becomes much more difficult for people to get loans associated with that type of ownership.
Yes.
And the reason why is that irrevocable trust is now an independent kind of functioning entity,
mm-hmm.
right? And it is functioning based on the testator, the person who died, the trustor's intentions. And now mm-hmm. that person's gone. So that person can't change the intentions. So it's generally speaking, you can't provide a guarantee as a beneficiary for an irrevocable trust to most lenders.
Right. And something else that I really wanted to make sure that I touch on before we move on is when I was doing my research on this topic, that just because you have a will does yeah. not mean it won't go into probate, right? And not only that, I believe the will document will become a public document in that case.
Well, not only that, but a will is not the same thing, right?
Yes.
So you typically get a will and a living trust, but in my mind, a will just gives a directive, do X, Y, and Z. A living trust has more value.
Yeah.
And there's some kind of weird nuances to the difference, but suffice it to say, if you go to a good attorney or a good website, they'll give you a living trust and a will, a last will and testament.
Yeah.
Right? The living trust is by far the better vehicle. A will just says, hey, do X, Y, and Z. It's very delineated. It's very clear. It's kind of like just directions.
Right.
Whereas a living trust is like a roadmap.
Mm-hmm.
Rudimentary, but effectively speaking, anyone who gives you a living trust should be also throwing in a will as well.
Right. And one other added benefit that I did read about, because I know that the divorce rate in this country is very high.
What is it right now? You know?
I think it's over 50%.
California's got to be over like 77%, right?
It's got to be something crazy. I mean,
Arun. You got to Google that. What's the divorce rate in California?
Yeah.
Wow.
After
very Jamie of you pulling that right
already
up.
Already had it up. After reaching a 40-year record low for two consecutive years, 2020 and 2021, at 14 divorces per 1,000 married women, the divorce rate rose slightly in 2022 to 14.5 divorces per 1,000 married women.
What's the divorce rate in California?
Let's try that. Yeah. Let's look at that up.
Oof.
This means that only us.
75 people out of 1,000 will be divorced in California. What's that chart to the right there?
California has a 60% divorce rate.
Damn.
Yeah. So yeah, above 50%. So this is having a trust is one way to ensure, hopefully you and your family don't have to deal with this, but it's one way to ensure that your children from a previous marriage are included in, you know, passing of those assets.
You know, I was thinking about this over the weekend. My wife and I were talking about somebody that we know that's moved on to a second marriage.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't do it.
It would be extreme. I mean, my wife and I, we already talked about it. I was like, there's no way. For me, there's no way.
Like, I would have no desire to do that again.
Yeah. It's like.
Okay. No, I mean, I don't mean it like in the negative context. Okay, that sounds bad. No, I don't mean it.
I was going to try to save it, but I couldn't even know how to save it.
I mean, look. Marriage is work. It's a partnership, right?
Right.
Like, what are you saying about, I mean, I understand some marriages are bad, some marriages you're young, blah, blah, blah. But when you're married and you have a kid, like, I know people get married again and they have more kids and they find love and all those things. Like, I got to be honest, man. Like, I don't think I'd want to do it again with somebody else.
For me, and this is, I mean, okay, prisoner of the moment, you can say that, right? But for me, knock on wood, marriage has been so great that I can't even envision it being any better. That's just the truth, man. I'm not even fronting here.
Said Omar, world's greatest husband.
That's not
father.
True. I'm just being honest.
When he's not coaching his kids sports and being the world's greatest
father. Oh, my
father,
God. By the way.
World's greatest husband, America.
In case he ever does come back and listen to these episodes.
Who? Arun?
Adam. This past weekend. Down 1 point, gets fouled with like a couple seconds left in the game, goes to the free throw line, knocks down the free throw to send it into overtime.
Who?
Adam.
Your son?
Yeah, dude. It was remarkable. But then guess what? He missed the second one. So I pulled him after the game, and we ended up winning the game. But I pulled him after the game. I was like, you made the hard one. You missed the easy one. What happened? So anyways, I was really, really proud of him. And honestly, he went up there. He didn't feel the pressure at all. Stepped up, did his routine, knocked it down.
You know, I'm sick, so maybe my judgment's a little off here, but this wholesome version of you is such bullshit.
What do you know?
It's such bullshit.
Don't be that guy.
No, I know you're proud. I think I just broke the chair.
This is your way of wanting new chairs? You've been sending me chairs. You're like, let's get these.
No, man. Okay, you know, before we get into the show, well, you know what? Let's Let's get into the show, and then let's get before we get into the real show, I have to admit something.
Oh, that's right. Let's get into
it. Yeah. Okay. So welcome back to the Higher Standard Podcast, the number one financial literacy podcast in the world. Sitting next to me, as you have probably surmised by now, the one and only Syed Omar, SAT vocabulary.
Surmise, bro. Yeah. Not bad. Thank you, my man. Sitting next to me on my left, my partner in crime, Chris Nahibi. Welcome back to the show, everybody.
And lovingly and affectionately, softly touching the ones and twos, the man, the myth, the legend has returned to us. DJ Arun, everybody.
Hello, hello.
Welcome back to the show, man.
Feels good, man. Feels good.
I don't feel like your energy level.
He had a stinky pinky, and then he had other stuff.
I did cover that on the episode.
It's been a rough last 3 weeks.
Yeah.
The stinky pinky played into that? Or?
Yeah. Stinky pinky.
Pink eye?
Yeah.
It does not help to have two kids that are in daycare.
Yeah, exactly.
Is there trouble in daycare paradise?
I hope not. I mean, my kids are the only ones that got pink eye, but.
Oh, they did? I thought I was being sarcastic.
No, but what do you mean? We called him having a stinky pinky.
No, I thought he legitimately had stinky pinky. I didn't think it was like a euphemism for pink eye.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
it's very confusing with you. You never know.
You coined it, man.
I know I did.
Bro, that happened. Stomach flu for...
You had the stomach flu?
No, the wife and Mariam.
So you gave him a stomach flu?
No, Mariam got it from school and then gave it to my wife and...
Yeah, it's wild.
Who then Hawal ended up getting?
Yeah, then Hawal ended up getting it too.
And you didn't get it,
dude. I'm immortal, bro. Like I'm.
Don't do that.
Knock on wood, man. You don't want
that. You better knock on some wood, bro. You don't want that karma. Yeah, you're gonna get stomach flu next week for sure. Hope you enjoy it. Yeah. Pooping your brains out.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so I sat here. I think it was last show, and I said to you that I'm not really fat and I'm lean. I'm probably around 11% body fat. I'm proud of myself.
Same here.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, Arun, this is closer to not true for both of us than I haven't been getting on the scale, but I've been working out hard.
Right.
And, I took Motsi, I took Tesafenzine from our friends over at Transcend. And for those of you who don't recall, we are sponsored by Transcend. You can go to transcendcompany.com/THSP.
Great way to help support the show.
And they'll hook you up. I'm actually taking some of their facial cream right now, which is not the reason my face looks like complete ass. Yeah. The reason I look like ass is I'm sick. But so I knew I weighed a lot before, but I had cut down. I felt good.
Mm-hmm.
Clothes
are fitting better.
Clothes were fitting better, and I felt pretty good about myself. And then I got on the scale this last weekend. I was like, huh. That number seems large. I go back to September of last year, and according to the scale, not only my body fat, my weight is exactly the same.
Okay, the whole body fat percentage on the scale thing, I don't trust that.
Yeah, I know you're gonna say that. Okay, so this is a Saturday. And I'm by Monday, I've already got a DEXA scan scheduled for 12:30 that day. I'm gonna get the full.
Wait, explain to people what a DEXA scan is. I know it's a lot of our listeners are from Mind Pump. They know, but
low level radiation. But basically, you're gonna get a full scan. Think of it as like a full body X-ray, giving you a full look at your tissue type, muscle, fat, and your bone density. Everything.
It's the best way to look at
the most accurate by far.
Right.
Okay. So, Daddy went and did that, and I am happy to report I am fatter than ever.
No, that's not true, man. Yeah,
I've gained 20 pounds of muscle.
If anything, that just means you were... Because you didn't get a DEXA scan last year.
No, I haven't had one in 5 years.
Okay, so then you were probably...
No. My last DEXA scan was... So if you go back 5 years, my last one before that, I was like 200 pounds, 204.
No. So you put on a lot of muscle mass.
I'm 250 something right now.
Yeah.
If you go back 6 years ago, after I went through a bulking phase... I was almost exactly the same weight. The scale was not wrong.
Wow.
And to make matters worse, my visceral fat, the fat around my organs, has doubled. It's the highest it's ever been.
Holy, that's scary.
Yeah, I'm still well below like bad. Like I'm still in a very healthy range. But for me, doubled.
Yes.
Right? And the number one place that I've gained body weight, my stomach and my love handles.
Yeah.
And
it's always the last place to go, right?
This wholesome Indian, like former nurse, turns to me and goes, yeah, I don't know how to tell you this in a nice way, so I'm just going to tell you, you need to lose weight.
Boy, you dick, is what she said.
And I was like, why are you being so mean about it? She's like, because I've got several years here of you being in incredibly good shape. So I know you know you let go.
Yeah. Yeah. Why did you let go, Chris?
And she walks me through the metrics, and I finally, I'm like, stop. Okay. I've been working on hard for 6 months. So whatever it was worse before today.
Absolutely.
And she goes, well, if you want a sunny side to this story, you did put on 20 pounds of muscle in a matter of a year and a half.
Which is impressive for somebody that's been working out for as long as you have. I mean, for someone who's just starting out, maybe a little bit more reasonable, maybe like 10 pounds, 15 pounds at most, but 20 pounds is a lot, dude.
Yeah. But she said, you're also still fat.
Dude, you put on 20 more pounds of muscle?
That means I had 164 pounds of muscle to 184 point something.
So wait, are you back to weighing in every week?
Yeah.
Have to, right?
Here's the problem. Is I've done so much metabolic damage, I'm eating 1,800 calories a day, 225 grams of protein.
And dude, I feel like that's not enough. There's no way that's enough.
There's no way that's enough. I'm still not losing weight, dude.
Dude, that's so you got a reverse diet.
It's been 2 weeks. The problem with reverse dieting is I'm going to gain weight before I lose weight.
Yeah, but that's what you have to do.
That's why I took 2 years off and got fat in the first place. I was reverse dieting.
No, but you weren't tracking. Like, you got to really reverse diet.
Sometimes, Saeed, you got to take the L.
No, okay. You're not going to accept this for the rest of your life. I'm not going to let you do that.
Join the fat side, Chris.
It's so much more fun over here.
I missed you, and my body has been craving you so much that I'm morphing into you.
No, I was
going to bring burritos, but you were sick, so I thought you couldn't eat a burrito.
Wouldn't you get a burrito for me because I'm sick?
Yeah, you need the comfort food.
Yeah.
Where's the logic?
So do you eat less when you're sick? Because it doesn't look like that. Top takeaways for tonight's show. Happen to be a couple conversations we're going to listen in on from Jerome Powell. A little thing called the FOMC meeting happened in the press conference afterward. Well, JP sounded a little less JP than normal this time.
What he's saying is not really aligning up with the narrative all along.
No, he slipped the script a little bit.
A little bit.
We're going to play a clip from that. We're also going to talk about the Federal Reserve posting a record loss. Little tiny dollar amount of $114 billion in the year of 2023.
What does that mean? That means the U.S. Treasury won't be getting additional money this year.
We're going to do some chart work, and we're going to get into that. Mohammed Al-Rayan, one of our favorite economists, he has an article which shows a rush of money has hit the U.S. corporate bond markets in 2024, kind of fulfilling the prophecy that our future Nobel laureate Saeed Omar has always expressed concern about. The U.S. corporate market is under some stress. They need some dollars.
They need a little bit of help.
Yeah. Then we're going to get into the chart of the day. Average rate for U.S. savings accounts has actually come down.
You want to know how big of a nerd I am? So when I got Instagram for this show, right, however many months ago it was. Mm-hmm. So I think the first person I followed was you, and then obviously the podcast. And then I did like a bunch of comedians that I like to follow, right?
Yeah.
And then the very next thing I did was Chart of the Day. I just saw how much I love the Chart of the Day.
Chart of the Day is great.
I love Chart of the Day.
It's a great visual.
Yeah.
Chart work's my favorite work.
Yeah.
We go round out the show, if there's time, with Kobisi Letter on home prices and real estate stocks sliding following landmark related decisions from the last episode. So you know, triply know, for sure, that Arun does not listen to the show.
we're gonna prove it up. But if you're listening to the show on Apple or Spotify, please head over and leave us an honest 5-star review. It does a lot for the show. It means a lot to each and every single one of us. If you're watching this over on YouTube, please make sure you subscribe, hit that notification bell, and make sure you smash that like button. Let's get this video out to as many people as possible. Make sure you do all the moist, goody good sassafras.
Pause threw me off a little bit.
I did because I looked at you. I wanted you to see if I was gonna stumble.
No, I was actually getting ready to say what I was going to say. This clip from Yahoo Finance talks about the FOMC press conference top takeaways from the conference that took place on March 20th. As you likely already know, they left rates unchanged. This was widely expected to be the decision. But let's listen to Uncle JP pop off and give us all cap and no facts.
Yeah.
FOMC decided to leave our policy interest rate unchanged. Our securities holdings have declined by nearly $1.5 trillion since the committee began reducing our portfolio. The overall picture really is strong labor market. The extreme imbalances that we saw in the early parts of the pandemic recovery have mostly been resolved. The labor market's in good shape. You do see things like the low hiring rate, and people have made the argument that if layoffs were to increase, that would mean that the net would be fairly quick increases in unemployment. So that's something we're watching, but we're not seeing it. My instinct would be that rates will not go back down to the very low levels that we saw, where all around the world there were long run rates that were at or below zero in some cases. I don't see rates going back down to that level, but I think there's tremendous uncertainty around that.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So let's be clear here about Uncle JP. This is the most honest tickle shits has ever been. Okay.
Really? Yeah, you think so?
Oh yeah, because you know what he's saying? Rates ain't ever going back down. Why didn't you say that a year and a half ago, Chiefy?
Yeah, right.
You know, I got every realtor out there was talking about, hey man, we're gonna see rates are gonna cut, blah blah blah. That's the key. That's a key thing to take away. Rates are not going back down. The 10-year treasury is gonna stay where it's at or go higher. Those are your only two options. It ain't coming down a whole lot from where it's at.
Really?
And if it does, it'll be nominal at best, meaning that you're going to have your push up on mortgage rates. That's the reality, okay?
Right. Okay, so this is the problem that I had with this whole post-game press conference. Okay.
Okay.
They said, basically, that we're going to be data-dependent, as they've always said.
Yeah.
Okay. The three data points that they want to look at is inflation,
yep,
jobs numbers,
yep,
and GDP. Okay? So they're saying if inflation comes down, we'll cut rates. Right? Fine. Down to their 2% target handle. If there aren't enough jobs out there and unemployment rate goes up, we're going to have to cut rates sooner, right? And they're saying if GDP, if we start to head towards a recession where we have negative GDP growth, right, then they're going to have to cut rates. But guess what? They're also saying we're still going to cut rates three times this year. Yeah. So it's like, wait a minute. All of these things are still like positive, showing no signs of needing a rate cut, but you're still going to rate cut.
And let's be honest, if we collectively as morons know that the jobs numbers are completely bullshit and have been revised down several times, for him to not address it and be so bold as to say, we might see a rapid cadence in layoff. Where the fuck have you been getting your news, guy?
Right.
There has been a rapid cadence in layoffs starting last year,
mm-hmm,
and carrying forward.
Yep.
For him to go, if we're just not seeing it in the data, what?
Right.
So you're just going to completely ignore that everybody's making fun of the BLS and the jobs reports and the revisions down, and everyone's going like, wait a minute, I'm seeing all these layoffs. Why isn't this reflected in the numbers anywhere? And then you're seeing all these revisions back down,
right?
Because the numbers that are being printed are not actually what we're getting finalized. Nobody's talking about it, and you, as an expert, a subject matter expert, who's using this as one of your two mandates, jobs,
mm-hmm,
you're going to sit here and tell me, I don't see it.
Yeah, I don't see it. Exactly. So the January inflation report and the February inflation report both came in not so well. Okay.
Not so well.
So, and they've said now we're going to be data dependent. Okay. Our next meeting is May 1st. Okay. There is not enough data coming out from now until then, that's going to change his mind. So guess what that means?
We're going to wait another time. We're going to hold and lovingly wait.
So, yeah, this is their way of foreshadowing. So I think at the time of this meeting, when this meeting came out, or when he was at the post-game press conference, there was an 11% chance at a rate cut. Now it's down to like 5%.
I know.
So it's like, holy cow, man. So now you're looking at June or July.
I think it's gonna be July. I'm leaning heavily towards July.
This is what's gonna happen. It's gonna be July, November, December. I'm already calling it.
I mean, you do have a laureate in your future, mm-hmm, so I just want to be there.
You want to be there?
I want to be clapping for you the way you clap for your son. You know, when he scores a bucket, when you get that laureate.
Yeah, man.
And then I'm gonna show everybody photos of you naked.
You don't have any of those.
Not yet. But I got time. I got time.
We got to make a couple of trips.
All right. Well, I know that is not exactly tactile and tangible, but I thought maybe we'd do some chart work here and start off a very heavy chart episode with another Yahoo Finance article. The Federal Reserve said on Tuesday that it officially saw a net negative income of $114.3 billion in 2023, a record loss tied to expenses related to managing the U.S. central bank's short-term interest rate target. The loss last year, Arun is joyfully eye fucking me with moving this chart.
No, he's trying to help you out.
I mean, that's as gracefully as possible.
But here's the problem you just created for yourself. In post production, you won't be able to take a snapshot of that without having to move that around.
Yeah, I can.
I can read it in the top left corner. You know what? Honestly, working with you two is becoming very challenging for me emotionally.
I quit.
Again? You just got back. Loss last year follows $58.8 billion in net income from 2022, the Fed said. The numbers released were an audited tally following preliminary numbers reported earlier this year. The Fed has stressed repeatedly that net negative income does not impede its ability to operate or conduct monetary policy by law. Okay. Mm-hmm. The Fed hands over any profits over covering, after covering operational expenses to the Treasury. So, great, we made some money. Hand it over to the Treasury. However, the Fed earns income from services it provides the financial system and from interest income on securities it owns. It has earned significant profits over recent years amid very low rates and very large levels of bond holdings. However, what this article doesn't cover is when it posts a negative, what does it do?
Yeah.
Instead of handing the money over to the Treasury, they post an IOU to themselves. And next year, they'll recap what they lost and pay themselves back to the extent that they can. And if they have any profits, they'll hand it over to the Treasury. If not, they'll just continue that loss carry forward over. So they can lose all the money in the world, in this case, over $114 billion.
Like a net operating loss.
Exactly.
Wow.
So
I don't think people understand how that works. You want to break that down? I mean, in like people in businesses, you do this. Like, well, this is something that I've seen as an underwriter over the years, right? If a business is able to use the tax code, the tax system in a way to where they can show a loss by writing off X amount of, you know, expenses, well, they can carry the excess losses over year over year over year so that, you know, they don't have to continue to pay taxes.
They can offset their taxable income. This is most notably in Trump's history, right? You take a massive loss on something, then what do? You carry that loss forward. And you offset your taxable income for the next several years.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's effectively what the Federal Reserve is doing here. But the Federal Reserve lost a ton of money last year. Ton.
Mm-hmm.
In part because of their own policies.
Insane, man. Yeah. Well, look, they're not going to be profitable forever. I mean, like, we know that this process is cyclical. Like, this is bound to happen.
Yeah, sure.
Eventually. But like you said, it didn't have to be to this extent, right? I mean, they did act on this late. This whole mess that we're in is their fault. Let's like they're portraying it out like we're trying to fix the problem. Yeah, fix the problem that they caused.
But look at the chart here. There are three elements in the chart. Okay. And I know you're colorblind, so I'm not gonna ask you to read this.
It's really fucked up.
Yeah.
I only see two.
Yeah, I know. There are two different shades of yellow.
Okay.
Sorry. Arun, since you've got a hot mic and you're close to the image here, there are three different distinct chart indicators here. The first one in the yellow dot there, read that one. It says U.S. Treasury what?
Remittance.
Yeah. We'll work on your English. The second one?
Transfer of capital surplus.
And the last one?
Cost of operations and excess of earnings.
So what you'll notice is there has not been a huge amount of capital surplus.
Right.
There has been remittance every single year going all the way back. Is that quarterly on the bottom? What are the years there?
Those are years. So the last one's 2023.
Okay.
Yeah.
The first one is?
The first one is 2014.
So 2014 to now, you saw some slight negative in 2022. You saw a massive negative in 2023.
Yeah.
What do you think 2024 is going to be?
Yeah, not so good.
So, thank you, Arun. Big boy pictures. Very helpful. So, if 2024 is equally as negative or greater,
mm-hmm.
hundreds of billions of dollars, it'll take years for them to recover.
Yeah, hundreds of billions of dollars that should typically be going over to the government, right? Yeah. That they actually account for in, you know, their revenue. What does that ultimately mean? This is why we've routinely said on the show, it's not just, you know, instances like this where the revenue that the government makes is actually going to decrease over the next few years, ultimately making us, you know, go further and further into debt because they're going to have to make up that money that they're not getting in by getting more debt.
And it's just goes to show you that the stress that they're putting in the system, well, it's putting stress on themselves as well. But let's talk about where else stress is getting in the system. Mohammed Al-Rayan, one of our favorite economists. I don't really normally peruse LinkedIn for a lot of data, and it's just because you got to look. You only got so many places in the day you can go for your data. I typically like X and websites and people that I trust, but I like Mohammed Al-Rayan, and this was an interesting one.
That smile, though.
Come on. He's got like a very like, ha-ha, I'm rich, bitch, smile going on there.
He does.
Yeah, he's like, hey, my mustache is left side is higher. So from the Financial Times article, and I'm quoting here, investors pour money into U.S. corporate bond funds at record rate. Demand to lock in yield helps push spreads on high yield bonds closer to their tightest level since 2007. A rush of money has hit the U.S. corporate bond market in 2024. So the take home here is if you look at the chart, which if you're driving, I want you to envision a beautiful world. Beautiful, calm world where we have this financial prosperity in the system. And then whatever you can think of as a total opposite, that's what we're getting right now. Okay? The bond market is starting to freak out, and there's been a rush of money in because people know that CDs and the depository rates are going down now.
Okay.
And the bond market does compete with CDs. And as the bond market starts to see some lift, right, and the long end of the curve starts to stretch out, you're going to have people going into the bond market, at, in this case, a record rate, to buy bond, corporate debts, U.S. government debts, to lock in profits at the highest interest rate they can for the longest period they can. So if you look at the chart that Arun's pulled up, you see relatively, you know, nothing going back several years to 2008. It was almost like the market was dead. And then you saw it pick up. And there was extreme swings up and down.
Right.
And then you saw a lot of runoff from the bond market. People really went into cash. They were concerned.
Right, because of what happened during the pandemic.
Right. Then what happened? Now people are diving back into this, which is going to create the spread, the inversion pressure. So you got the yield curve inversion where you have a 2-year, which is paying more than the 10-year.
Right.
You're going to start seeing this 10-year now creep up, and you're going to start seeing it level out in response in part to this.
Now, that's going to be really interesting because if the Fed is – so at this last FOMC meeting, right, they doubled down on what they said in December, saying that we still think – we're still going to commit to 3 rate cuts this year.
Okay? Yeah, which was an interesting take because them doubling down on that was an interesting choice. Now, notoriously, the Fed – has a bad prediction of what they're going to do. They generally don't hit what they say they're going to do.
That's true.
But for them to double down like that was interesting. But it did come at the same time where the market expectation for rate cuts is now aligned with what they're saying. So the market is basically saying with their assumptions of what they think is going to happen that we now believe the Fed.
Yeah, we believe you guys. Sorry, we were wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, we get it, JP. You're going to do what you're going to do.
Right, exactly. There's nothing, we can't change your mind. So if let's just say there are 3 rate cuts by the end of the year, that would mean the Fed funds rate right now currently, which is at 5.5%, would be down to 4.75%. Okay?
Man, yeah.
Okay, so well, that
it feels imaginary, but maybe, yeah.
I mean, that would be, we could all use it, okay? And we'll get into some of these credit card accounts and what their average APRs are right now. And how it may also help them out too.
Actually, I was going to go to savings accounts and CDs next.
Yeah, but that's credit cards right after that.
Yeah, I don't read your contributions.
That's your contribution, dude.
I don't read your contribution to the conversation.
Got it. But if that does happen, right, I get what you're saying here and how this could put upward pressure on the 10-year and why you should care about this upward pressure on the 10-year. Because if you're hoping for mortgage rates to come down, mortgage rates closely follow what goes on with the 10-year, right?
And I really don't. I know that people think that that's going to happen as a response, an emotional response to the market. I just don't. I don't see that being a possibility. All the economic pressures that keep these things high are clear. This is not speculation on my part. Like, they're there.
Yeah.
People have this weird thing like, oh, the Fed's going to cut rates. That means mortgage rates are going to drop. No, it does not.
Right.
Okay, the bond market in the 10-year treasury in particular is the biggest indicator for mortgage rates. And that ain't going down anytime soon.
Really? Okay, so that's what I was thinking. Because I too was thinking that if they did cut rates to 4.75% by the end of the year, then naturally the 10-year would also come down.
Which is, I get that. And there's a lot of people who believe that. And there's a lot of really intelligent people that I argue with this about a lot.
Okay.
I know Logan over at Housing Wire has a different opinion on this. And maybe I'm a little bit too overconfident on it. But let me break this down. All right. So if you have a yield curve inversion where people have very little confidence in what's going to happen in far too in the future, right? They're more confident what's going to happen in the next year or two. They invest heavily in the two-year treasury.
Okay.
Right? Because they're limited on their on what they're willing to do long-term with their money because they're just unsure.
Right. Right.
So because of that confidence, the two-year starts to go higher and the 10-year starts to go lower. They're just not confident in the long end.
Mm-hmm.
If the Fed is successful at stabilizing the economy, this Goldilocks scenario, presumptively, you should become increasingly more confident in the long end of the curve.
Yes.
And as you become more confident in the long end of the curve, what you're really saying is, I'm okay investing my money for longer in that longer duration to get more return in the market.
Right.
That means money going into the two-year will come down as money going into the long end, the 10-year goes up. We're also in an inverted yield curve, which is typically precedes recessionary economies. It's an indicator like all the other warning indicators talked about on the show many times. In order to get out of this, there's only a couple different ways this can go. They can either both go, one go down a little bit, and the other one go up a little bit, right? Because the 10-year has to somehow creep above the 2-year.
Right.
The 2-year can drop to the floor, or the 10-year can spike above the 2-year.
Yeah, but here's the problem with the 2-year. It closely tracks whatever the Fed is saying that they're going to do.
Correct.
Right.
Which means if they do cut rates, the 2-year most likely comes down. And even if the 10-year comes down a little bit, you're still going to see upward pressure as confidence in the long end begins to creep up.
Got it. Got you.
And I know it's a bit more technical or more nuanced than we get into, and I'm not doing a good job of explaining how the mechanisms work here. Let me give you a more relatable example, okay? Let's jump into the chart of the day, average rate for U.S. savings account.
Yeah, CNBC.
So you've seen savings accounts jump pretty incredibly. Now, on this chart, there are several dotted lines. Once again, Saeed is colorblind, so I'm not going to waste the time getting into that. Basically, the dotted lines represent Fed meetings.
Okay.
The red ones represent, I believe, no interest rate increase. And the blue ones represent interest rate increases. Arun, did I read that right?
I'm not seeing a description of...
Yeah, I don't see a description.
Yeah, the dashed lines mark the U.S. It's the part where the description's at the bottom there.
Oh, okay. Well, it means, okay. There you go. Red dashes are meetings when rates are increased.
Okay,
yes.
So there you go. So rates increase in the red lines. No, nothing was done on the blue lines. And for those of you who are driving, every single red line had an increase in U.S. saving accounts on average happen afterward.
Yeah, why did both then banks needed to do that?
Right. So their cost of funds, their cost to borrow went up.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So if I'm going to borrow from the bank, I can be more competitive and pay you more for deposit rates to get your money in as long as it's cheaper than my otherwise cost of funds somewhere else.
Right.
So as the cost of funds raise for the banks, they're trying to get money wherever they can. So if I can borrow from the interbank system for 5.4%, if I give you 5.25%,
yes,
I'm still money good.
Exactly.
That's the cheapest money in the market right now for me to get is your money at that rate.
Right. And banks need to do that to, you know, keep their customers happy and have their money stay at the bank so they can continue to lend on it.
So what's really important here is this is where people have put their money as of late, is they put their money into cash because you're paying... You're getting average interest rates that are pretty high. Arun, what's the average interest rate for the U.S. savings account there? It's a really, really small font there.
You see it?
The top right of the chart, May 13th or March 13th.
0.58%.
Thank you. Arun, are you even playing here today?
I'm trying to open the chart. I couldn't see it either.
The Fed hasn't touched interest rates since July, okay?
Right.
But they're still moving. In this case, they're actually increasing on average because now you've got several months, 2 years essentially, of Fed interest rate increases. So the weighted average interest rate in portfolios is moving up. But that percentage, that point, what was it?
0.58.
That is low on average. That's taking everybody who's got high yields and, you know, in their interest-bearing deposits, non-interest-bearing deposits. It's a bit of a quandary. But if you go to the next chart, the average rate for 12-month certificates, CDs,
mm-hmm,
deposit in U.S.,
yeah.
That's a much higher number, 1.81%.
Yes.
You'll see it's on the decline now.
It's coming back down.
Yeah. It peaked in about, was it April?
Maybe January, February.
January, February, somewhere there. Mm-hmm. It peaked, and now it's on the way down. And the reason why this is happening is banks have said, okay, we anticipate rate cuts this year.
Right.
So because we know rates are going to be moving down, our cost of funds to go down, we're going to make sure that we don't lock in higher interest rates.
Because this is 12 months.
12 months. So what they did is they lowered their 12-month CDs and increased their 9-month CDs so that they can reduce their overall costs over time.
Right.
Chris, what the hell does this matter with bonds?
Yeah, why does this matter, Chris?
As the return for 12-month, 1-year duration CDs drops, the bond market now looks much more attractive because it's paying more over a longer duration.
Yeah, it makes sense because, you know, this is advice that we've been, you know, saying or doing, giving out on the podcast is like the right thing to do right now is to hold your cash. Make sure you put it into a savings account.
Yeah.
Right? Because it was giving you, you know, some accounts were giving you up to like 5%.
For 2022, it was definitive. Holding cash was one of your best returning assets.
Yeah, because if, let's just say the stock market on average gives you a return of somewhere between 7 to 10%, right? Let's just be conservative. Let's just say call it 7%. Are you really going to risk putting your money into the stock market to get 7% when you can get a guaranteed 5% in the savings account? Like, when was the last time that happened?
So let me boil this down in non-technical speak in a way that's relatable and digestible for everybody.
Okay.
You will always hear talk of bonds, of CDs, of stocks, of real estate. And there are all sorts of different ways to compare them. Capitalization rates, market cap, and all these things people will point to. At the end of the day, the game is this simple. The only thing you're doing is moving your money in the place that will give you the best return at the time. And as the market shifts, if you're cognizant of enough of those shifts, mm-hmm. you move your money into a better place for a better return. If you're a busy working professional, that's hard to do. Which is why we tell people to go into low-cost index funds and to avoid playing this game. However, institutions, large companies that hold a lot of cash, think of people like Apple. Think of people like Amazon. They're holding all this cash they put in the banking system. When they pivot their money into things like cash in the form of CDs or bonds, they're moving the needle there as well. There's also wealth advisory firms that have cash. There's all sorts of people that are playing cash strategies beyond the retail consumer. They're really moving the needle here at an institutional level.
Right.
Which is why you see a wide difference in just your average operating account, your average interest-bearing accounts and their interest rate versus the CD accounts.
Got it.
Different vehicles for different things.
Right.
The last chart we have here is the average credit card for APRs, average credit card APRs in the U.S., 20.75%.
Damn.
That's a swift kick in the ding ding. That's the average APR in the US.
Yeah, I want to say pre-pandemic levels were like 16%.
Yeah, I mean March 2023 was at 19.9. So yeah. To give you an idea, it's been increasing.
Yeah.
But this has increased at a much faster cadence all the way until about September this year. Mm-hmm. And since then it's slowed down.
Mind you, coming at a time when balances are hitting all time highs.
1.13 trillion. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a problem.
Yeah, people are having to use them just to make ends meet. Yeah, man. I don't. Do you see APRs for credit cards coming down when the Fed does cut rates?
I'm so sorry. I'm sniffling, man. I'm so sick.
No, it doesn't matter.
Do I see APRs coming down? Yeah, I think it will. But the problem for most Americans is if you're paying 20% interest,
you're not really paying it down.
You're not getting out of it. One of my followers on LinkedIn. You know, I want to pause here actually, just for a brief moment. I've been getting hit up by so many people on so many different platforms talking about, hey, the last episode was great. The show was great. In the last episode, and this has largely been your constructive feedback, the way you've changed the episodes, the way we go into things, and some of that's all been you. That, you know, and I'll give you credit where it's due. It's really cool to see people I don't know that are not like in my network hit me up and be like, hey, man, like, I really like the show. I heard you say this. And I just want to say thank you. Because,
yeah.
I mean, without them, and some of these people, the show started off with our friends and family, and now that it's gotten to a point where these people will hit you up and be like, hey, I really like this, you know, and they reach out and connect, that's really cool, man.
It is really cool. I actually got some of them here that I think is worth reading. As a young 20-year-old, I really enjoy how relatable and simple you guys make the show. The show is informative, yet still entertaining. It's either that or I'm just some 24-year-old finance nerd. Either way, love you guys.
You're not a nerd. You're a genius ahead of your time. You're a sophisticated aristocrat.
We love you, bro.
We love you very much.
Yeah.
Give me some other ones.
Fluffy Doughboy. That was the name.
Sounds like an aristocrat to me.
Yeah.
Fluffy Doughboy.
Loving the financial tips at the top of the show. Fantastic change. Wanted to ask, investing is top of my mind as of late. Debt-free and looking to diversify my finances and grow my current savings. Though I appreciate what to invest in, how do I do this? You said Vanguard or E-Trade account. I'm a visual learner and would love to see how to create and start one of these accounts. I appreciate any and all help. Blessings to you both for making me laugh and learn at the same time. Do we tease it?
I think you give him just a tip.
just a tip.
Just a tip for right now. And then
TIP.
Yeah, then the whole thing later on.
Yeah, I didn't know that TI, his nickname was Tip.
Tip, yeah.
And then there was a diss track that came out where I think Ludacris dissed him, calling him the tip of my you know what. And then he's had to change. He chose to change the TI.
I do know what. Can you clarify what he was referencing in that?
I know we have an explicit rating, but this feels a little vulgar for me, even for me.
I got to be honest. All of the phallic jokes come from me.
You're on it. Wow. You need to get sick more often. Did you take some truth serum?
I did. Yeah. Saeed came up with a brilliant idea, which he messaged me in an enthusiastic rapid text fire message.
I did. It wasn't structured at all.
No, it wasn't structured at all. And I was in a meeting going like, Jesus Christ. Like, I was like, I'll read it later. Jesus.
I was like, I got an idea. Yeah, we got to do this.
Yeah. We're going to do it this way. We're going to do that way. And oh my God. Oh my God. And I'm like, holy shit.
Yeah.
But it was a good idea. So yeah. To respond to our friend here, who's a visual learner, we have a way to prove out what we're saying is not only an effective technique, but we have a way to show you visually. We have a way to keep you engaged, and we have a way that you and us as a team can do something together and make money together.
Right. This is somewhat of a tip of the cap or pay homage to Warren Buffett and the gang over there.
Yeah.
We're going to be betting on this, and hopefully you guys enjoy it and are, you know, tune in for the ride.
Hopefully we'll do that. We'll debut that on next week's episode, but...
Not when they get this, so like it'll be 2 weeks from now, right?
Because
next week's episode, this one comes out next week.
Today, for the reference point, is Tuesday, March 26th.
Yeah.
So not this following Tuesday, because you'll get this episode, but the one after this, you should get that. Everyone's pulling up a calendar right after I've already named the dates. That's very useful, yeah.
Right. I appreciate it. He's proactive tonight. He's getting out in front of it. He's trying.
He's Jamie Light tonight.
Yeah.
Pitchboy keeps complaining.
No, I'm not complaining. Look, I missed several weeks.
Sorry, Fat Boy.
That's the appropriate. Thank you.
Yeah.
It's scientifically proven now. I've got a full scan.
Yes, sir. Think a lot.
It basically has an end result where it says, you are fat, sir.
Your poor doctor looked at you and was like, enough's enough.
And I'm like, look.
You know what else is fat? These home prices.
That's a questionable segue.
He's doing it for Hefe.
For Hefe.
For Hef.
Yeah.
While inflation is 10 times higher now than 60 years ago, home prices are actually 24 times more expensive, a new study found, this according to CNBC.
Mm.
If home prices increased at the same rate as inflation since 1963, the median price of a typical house in the United States would be $177,511, according to new research by Clever, a real estate data company. Great name.
Solid name.
Yeah, that's very clever.
That's staying in their lane.
Yeah. Like, don't be Redfin.
No, why? No, we like them.
No, I know, but that name is complete dog shit.
No, they're friends.
Yeah, and they are friends, but the name is terrible.
Yeah, I got data from them too coming right after.
Continuing on, Arun, I'm going to need you to scroll down a little bit while I do this. Thank you. In reality, the cost of a typical house in the U.S. is closer to $500,000. The median price for a home in the U.S. is $412,778, according to new Redfin data.
Mm-hmm.
Reliable data, but terrible name.
Yeah.
Today, it's harder for adults to buy homes than it was for their parents' generation, said Matt Brennan, a data writer at Clever and the author of the report.
Damn, they couldn't give him the title of chief economist, the data writer?
Yeah, that's kind of a dick, a little light.
That's a dick move, bro.
That is a little respect adjacent.
Yeah. Come on, man. Just make him an economist over at Clever. Why gotta be data writer?
Matt, we respect your writing. And we think you write well about data.
Bro.
But an economist, you are not.
You can't make Hey, there he is. Hey, we're pulling him up. This guy, he looks like a stud. He can't be director of data. Like, come on, make him something. What's going on here?
Matt Brennan is a data writer at Clever Real Estate, the nation's leading real estate educational platform for home buyers, sellers, and investors, who obviously does not like economists. Before joining Clever, Matt worked as a journalist for Redding.com, where his coverage earned California Journalism Awards for in-depth reporting, investigative reporting, writing. Oh, it's because he's not an economist.
Bro, he went to USC. That's the homie for you.
Yeah, I know, but, like, but it's, that wasn't a knock on him. He's literally a journalist. But his journalistic skill is around data analysis, which is confusing. Oh, God, Matt, I hope you don't hear this.
Yeah, someone's going to send him. I can't believe we didn't get any hate from the realtors out there.
Realtor.
Realtor.
Yeah. You know what?
I said it, realtor. What are we doing?
Yeah. We have no respect. We're respecting Jason here. We covered
respecting
that.
Respecting Jason. We got no hate. I kind of came at them a little hard on the last one.
The settlement?
No, not the settlement. The fact that, you know, the steering.
You know how many social media posts I've seen lately going, you know, we here at Name Your Real Estate Firm, we're not worried about the repricing circumstances. We're just trying to stay in our lane and focus on providing value for our clients.
Yeah.
And because we know we can provide value, we're not concerned with this. So don't worry about changing the paradigm. Worry about providing value to your clients because they'll pay your fees for the. I'm like, bitch, please. You need to be concerned.
Yeah, man.
This is the beginning. This is a tsunami, and you're seeing the waves pull back, and you're going to say, we're not worried here at Laguna Beach of a pending tsunami. Yeah, the waves are going out, and it looks like a tsunami could be hitting us, but we're really working on providing a great visitor experience.
You know what I can see? I can see the bigger institutions really profiting off this.
Oh, so a listener who hit me up today said something, and I have to research this, but he said that in Australia, they don't actually have as much of a realtor-like presence there, that they predominantly drive off of the sales platforms. Like they have their equivalent of like Zillow and Redfin there is actually where the majority of the transactions happen.
Okay.
So I want to look into that in a future episode, and I do want to cover this kind of home price crash article from the Kabisi letter here coming up. But that'd be an interesting kind of foreshadowing of what could happen.
Let's put Zillow and Redfin aside. I could see a world where, you know, Berkshire Hathaway, right? Their agents there. I can easily see them be like, all right, you got to take in this many buyers, you know, and charge them a really low fee, and then you get leads on to sellers, right? I can easily see a world where that happens.
Give me a little more color.
So, for instance, like, so if right now sellers aren't having to pay buyers commissions, right? And the agent for the buyer has to negotiate, you know, what their fee is going to be up front, right? Yeah. Charge a really low flat fee for, you know, for buying the property.
Oh, yeah. You're just talking about moving more like volume based.
Yeah. It's like kind of like, you know, like any business that you're trying to scale, you know, you do a lot of free work up front early, and then you get paid out really on the back end later.
Well, and this is – so every single D-bag who sells something, like, you know, on social media, and they offer, like, a low-cost or low-ticket buy-in.
Yeah.
What they're really paying for is they're paying for your email address or your contact information.
Exactly.
And they might spend $100,000 selling you some $3 or $5 tchotchke, right? Mm-hmm. And they may earn back, like, $90,000 or $80,000, but they basically got – tons of leads for $20,000 or $10,000.
Easy money, right? And they already know a majority of the people out there, like, oh, that company took care of me last time. Now I'm just going to go through them this time and accept that cost now going into it because they took care of me on the last deal, right?
That is 100% the way the real estate world and commissions are going to go.
Yeah.
And I know that people are going to disagree and they're going to be all sorts of salty about that, but allow me to express my respect adjacent thoughts on this. I don't fucking care.
Respect adjacent, so good.
Yeah, put some respect on my name.
Yeah.
Adjacent to it anyway.
Like Kabisi.
So the Kabisi letter. Breaking news, according to the Kabisi letter. Obviously, this was breaking news several days ago because we don't report in real time, kids. We report in real time.
Yeah, it's our time.
Yeah, it's our time.
You're on my time right now.
You know our time is a dating website for old people, right?
No, it's not.
Yeah. Our time, yeah.
Like, how do you spell it?
Our time.
Our?
Oh, you.
Yeah. Our. No, you said our. Our. Our time.
Okay, you're not going to do this right
now.
I normally would talk shit.
When you said our time. I'm like, is it rated our time?
When I do the thumbnails, I use Captionator. I use this AI-generated tool to help take our voices and make a visual representation in the form of, you know, sub captions.
Oh, really?
Right, yeah. And when I do the captions in the videos, for somehow you always come off very clearly translated, and I come off sounding like a complete jackass.
Why?
My voice sucks, dude. It's so deep that it, like, all the words mesh together. I don't enunciate. I don't know.
You got a good podcast voice, though.
You would think so, but not according to AI.
No?
AI likes you.
Okay.
AI does not like me.
Thank you, AI.
New home prices are now down 20% from their highs. Key point here to differentiate, these are new homes that are being built, brought to the market, not existing homes.
Right.
Anytime someone talks about housing data, you should typically hear of that as being the key differentiator. New homes delivered to the market, homes that are being built and delivered to the market to solve the supply and demand inventory issue.
Right.
Versus existing homes in the market that are being sold from people leaving them and moving out.
Right. So, and just to recap off what the last article Chris touched on, just so we can compare the two, he said, this is from Redfin, median sale price came in at $412,000, right?
Yes.
That's up 6.5% 12 months ago, year ago. That's year over year. So median sale price of all homes up 6.5%. Okay. But this is saying new homes.
Yeah. So, and that's how data can be manipulated, kids. This is the Dave Ramsey school. You know, we're going to focus on the 6% up increase in the sales information. We're not going to look at things that might portray a negative image of what it is we're trying to say.
Yeah.
Well, let's give you the other side of the coin here. So new home prices down 20% from their highs in bear market territory. Bear market, not good market. Bull market, good market. Bear market, sad market.
Okay. Yeah, explain the difference between the two.
A bull is aggressive. We'll poke you right in the ass. A bear, aggressive, but we'll scratch you.
Yeah, like a bitch. A bull's going to hit you up, and a bear's going to swipe down.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's relatable. And it's falling faster than rates seen in 2008, according to ReVenture, one of our favorite data sources. New home prices peaked in late 2022 at $497,000 whopping dollars and have fallen to $401,000 as of the latest data.
Now, you can see that, right? If the median sale price of a home is going to be $412,000, right, then a price of a new home should be higher than that.
Should be.
Right.
But now?
Not so much.
Not so much. Which, in my mind, foreshadows, kids. In the financial crisis, new home prices dropped by 23% from 2007 to 2010, according to ReVenture. Now, we're seeing an already 20% drop from 2022 to now. Imagine how much more room you have down to go.
Yeah, this really hurts the home builders, right?
It does, yeah. We are down roughly the same amount in just 1.5 years, or half of the time.
Yeah, man.
Still, new home sales prices are down 20% above pre-pandemic levels, and existing home supply is near record lows. Is the housing market beginning to crack? Well, kids, according to this sexy chart that Arun put up, and I know you can't see, all charts have a squiggly up and down when you look at them real close. And when you zoom out,
peaks and valleys
go away, and it's just straight lines up. And this chart would have you going mostly up until the Great Recession, where there was a spike downward. And while there is intermittent ups and downs in between, it pretty much rose steadily all the way up until 2022. And now you're seeing a dramatic drop off from that $497,000 number down to $401,000, tantamount to obviously what we talked about earlier, 2022, but certainly on a trajectory almost as fast as the rise from 2020 to 2022. And that should be concerning.
It should definitely be concerning. So, you know, earlier we talked about Jay Powell at the post-game press conference, and one of the reporters asked him, you know, with housing data and what's coming out, clearly we said it's up now 6.5%, you know, from 12 months ago, right?
Yeah.
Median sale price of all homes. They said, how does this fit into the inflation picture? We know that housing makes up a majority of inflation, right? 34% if you're looking at CPI. And he said, we're confident that we think we can get inflation down to 2%, even if housing doesn't come down. And I was looking at him like, the fuck are you talking about, dude? It ain't getting hit 2% if housing doesn't come down.
Yeah, I don't really understand.
Like, are you buying the crock of shit? Like, what are you saying?
I don't buy crocks of shit, Saeed.
You do buy crocks of shit. You have crocks that are shit.
I have several pairs of crocs. I even have the Chalet Binberries.
They got names?
They look like fingerprints.
What are those?
This is the special limited. You know what? I know that you feel like you're deep in the shoe game.
I'm not.
Although I do want some Air Max 1s. I think that's what I'm craving right now.
Telling you, Air Max 1s are the ways to go.
The ways?
Yeah, that's the ways.
And yet somehow AI understands what you say more than
it's
me.
It's the way, bro.
It's astonishing.
It's the way, Air Max 1.
Arun, I know that we've missed you and we've been giving you a little bit of shit this episode, but the show's not the same without you, bud.
Thank you, sir. I'm Googling Air Max 1s right now.
You gotta... Honestly, if a listener messaged me and said, I don't know what Air Max 1s look like, I'm like, we can't be friends.
You know the pair for Air Max Day is going to be white, like a kind of like a tealish blue, and like a neon, like Volt color.
Mm.
And they're coming in like a special
sexy,
package.
Man. Yeah. I love them so much that I even want their golf shoe.
That's going to be my next gym shoe, I think. I was rolling with Air Max 90s for the last couple months for the gym shoe, but it's starting to get worn out.
And I think the bubble in the Air Max 1s, they use the same long bubble for the Air Max 4s. For the Jordan 4s. That's where they got the inspo from.
It doesn't strike me as a surprise at all that you think that's long. Was that 2 inches?
You're so stupid.
No, it's an interesting choice of words.
How did you get there?
You said it was a long bubble, and I'm looking at it going, it looks so petite.
Something to keep in mind is for housing. Housing inventory right now, 1.4 million homes.
Looks like a baby's finger.
Okay. There are 1.4 million homes listed for sale.
Like a newborn, maybe.
Pre-pandemic, it was over 2 million homes for sale. Okay. So that's approximately 40% more when compared to today, right? So I'm really interested. Chris mentioned that he thinks that there's going to be upward pressure on the 10-year. Look, if there just happens to be downward pressure, and some of these people are right, what's going to happen to home prices if the 10-year comes down?
Oh, we're going to have mortgage rates fall down, right? Which, by the way, we're still well below the historical average 8%. Mortgage rate, right?
No, but we talk about it. We can't do that. That's wrong because wages haven't kept up. So you can't say we can't. It would be negligent on our part to not also bring that up.
No, it's true. 100% it's true. Look, if you have a spike in the home market from here, which I mean theoretically, I guess you could. I'd be very worried about what happens next, and that's the question I've had for so many housing economists. I truly don't understand the. Okay, so let me paint a picture for you. For a long time, existing home sales were leading the way in volume because you can't deliver supply to the market fast enough in new home sales to meet the demand. And people would often sell a lot more existing home sales than they would new home sales because of that. But then people went, shit, I don't want to get in these bidding wars on these existing home sales going through, you know, open houses, all these things. I'd rather just go to a new home builder, put in my money, and buy a home. Because at least that way I can avoid this, you know, fuck around and find out bidding process.
So to Chris's point, in 2021, 2022, 55 to 60% of sales were above list.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. Currently, this is the one good data point that's coming out right now in the housing market. They're currently back down to 25%, which I know seems high, one out of every four, but that's approximately around pre-pandemic numbers. That's about average. That's going to happen.
That's about right, yeah.
Yeah.
People have, you know, desirable homes, that's what happens. But here's the problem, though, is if when people shifted into the new housing market, they were like, okay, you know what? I'm willing to pay a premium because I don't have to do this bidding. Now they're saying, I'm actually willing to pay a discount to the average home price to buy this new home sale,
right?
This new home.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, this leading the way is foreshadowing what existing home sales should do as well. Because there should be somewhat of an equilibrium. And people should be, in general, be willing to pay more on average for new home sales. Now, that could be some of the stock, and I haven't looked at the data here that's behind this with the Reventure, but it could be some of the housing stock is more affordable housing, which is really what we need anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But I would venture to guess that's not the case.
Got it.
So It's been a long show. We're about an hour and 18 minutes in.
Hopefully you're still around.
And for those of you who are still around, we love you. We appreciate you. We need you. And
you know who needs you more right now is Diddy.
Yeah.
This guy, is he going away?
What's shocking to me that, why didn't we get more coverage in the traditional media on this?
I'm not sad about it. Is that bad? Am I a bad person?
But Diddy going away?
Yeah.
I'm not sad about it at all. Fuck him.
I'm honestly, I've never been a fan, really. Never.
I want to see all the sex tapes of him. Like,
finish that sentence.
No, of him being taken advantage of, because you know they're out there.
Oh, I was going
to
say.
Like, you know he's paid to be on the receiving end.
Because he might have some sex tapes of him
doing
some things.
I want all those leakers out there to leak him.
Yeah.
You know what? Because the stuff that he's been accused of doing and, you know, and the Cassie stuff, like, I don't know if you read the lawsuits. I did because I read lawsuits. So wildly, just extremely inappropriate.
Let me tell you, man, when they pull up in the black trucks and the black cars and they raid the house, it's over for you. Okay, there's no explaining. It's game over.
Yeah, dude, they don't. 50 Cent was been trolling him for a long time, right? There's historic beef here.
He's laughing now, right?
Oh, dude, he posted. He's like, look, let me be honest.
He's the best.
The FBI don't raid your house. On suspicion.
No, it's over. They figured it out.
They didn't come to your house because they think they may got something. They got something, bro.
Yeah, but here's the question, though. Also, like, I mean, this is not new. This has been going around for a long time. Like, if people knew about this, how did everyone just keep it under wraps?
I mean, do I really need to go here?
Yeah. What do you mean? Of course. Bro.
There was a fucking island. People were flying pedophiles to.
Well, that's
Jeffrey Epstein had an entire human Ponzi scheme going on.
That's different.
Decades, dude.
You're talking about the elite and like literally the.
What do you think Puff Daddy or Diddy or whatever the fuck he calls himself was for?
Okay, here's the difference between them. Okay, come on, the parties that Diddy was hosting. All right, there's got to be some fast loose mouths at those parties.
That's sexual. You did that on purpose. You did that on purpose. That's not fair. Don't do that to me.
Come on, it's fucked up. You can't be making jokes like this right now, Chris.
You say fast, loose mouths. Nobody said that.
What does that mean?
So you can say people who got big mouths. I mean, that's different. So accurate.
Hey.
But you went with two adjectives. Hey. Fast and loose.
Fast, loose. That's a saying, bro.
You're taunting me at that point. Okay?
Don't put that shit on me.
You're taunting me. That's what you're doing. If you would have said, you know, he's got a big mouth, I'd be like, okay, that's a slip. When you say he got a big, dirty mouth, that's intentional.
Come on, man. I would say the people that are attending these parties, not all of them are reputable. Okay?
Wow, that's racist.
What do you mean? What's racist about it?
Would P. Diddy all races, have some reputable friends?
All races are going to these parties.
P. Diddy have reputable friends? What does that
mean? No, sure, he does. But some of the people that are being invited, come on, man. You know this. It's not the same thing. You're talking about government officials or people that are so entrenched in the government with the Epstein Island, okay? And then now you're going to compare those people to people that are attending Diddy's party?
Yeah.
Come on.
Stop. You want a great example? Look at our national deficit.
what does that mean?
These are high-ranking politicians.
What do you mean? They don't care. Okay. They don't care about the national deficit.
Brian Moynihan.
Oh, he didn't go to Epstein Island.
Let's be honest. I'm not putting that out there. But I'm saying, like, he's a person of perceived power that you would say would not go to a Diddy party, right?
100%.
And you're saying he's a different quality of human being?
No, I'm not saying he's a different quality of human being. I'm saying
I got to be honest. I would not want to be in a locker room alone with Brian Moynihan.
Okay. No, I wouldn't either.
Yeah.
Hold on. Neither would I. But that's a completely different game. Although the similar things were happening, right? At both places. So I'm just shocked that it took this long.
It's always shocking that it takes this long. The crazy
thing like Weinstein, what, right? The movie director guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, why did that take so long?
Well, so I have experience in Hollywood around his, like, cadence of fame.
Holy cow.
So, like, I mean, parties at Brett Ratner's house and some of these guys, like, some of the stuff that you saw, that industry... In my short, limited exposure to it, where we did some production stuff and we did all that stuff, and I would really like to spend some time talking to Alejandro Solomon about this. We went to lunch with him. We talked about this a little bit.
Yeah, man. So, dude, by the way,
that industry is just fucking wild.
It's crazy, and he's just such a cool guy.
Ali, yeah. He likes me a whole lot more than
Wait, hold on. You guys are cool like that? Don't call him Ali.
No, I mean,
you're not tight like that.
No, we're just fast and loose mouths.
You know, he's not loose.
No, he's not.
He's not loose. He's good. He's
right on the corner from me now.
Yeah, he's stud.
Well, he still never sees each other.
Got the Cybertruck.
He did. He's fucking every day he posts photos of that thing.
Yeah, smart.
I'm like, you've got fucking hyper cars, bro.
Yeah.
He's like, I love this truck.
Yeah.
I'm like, you have hyper cars. He's like, I know. I love the truck.
That's cool.
It's weird. Yeah. All right. Well, if you've stood by and listened to us and our perverted rantings, let me leave you with this one thing. I am disappointed in the U.S. government that these things take so long, but it couldn't happen to a bigger piece of shit. So I hope he goes down and fries.
Yeah. Likewise. Make sure to support the show. Head over to transcendcomedy.com/THSP. Contact somebody over there. Make sure they can take care of you. They got a lot of good stuff over there for longevity. And even though if you think that they may not, I bet you they do. Give them a try.
That was awkward. Health and wellness. And for the record, I was fatter before Transcend.
Yeah, this is the improved version.
It's the improved version.
It's getting better.
My visceral fat so high.
Oh, dude, you got anything else?
Please end this.
No. All right. Good night, everybody.
Bye.
Bye. What's that?